And then you might say stuff like, maybe we just do the minimum thing, and maybe just for some user. For the others, it's too complicated anyway. And when you overcame that in time, and realized I really have to do it all, then the next stage is depression, a very deep depression, and that's the everyday life of developers. How are we supposed to do that? How can I do that in my everyday life? How can I integrate that into my process that it doesn't fall down and I drop it, because we have to pay fines. And once you integrate that in your everyday life, then there's acceptance. So the GDPR helps us with so that you maybe even have other advantages other than just data protection. And now I'm asking myself, how can we make a software GDPR conform? Is that user-friendly? Is it technically clean? And is it easy and fast to develop like that? So now I want to give a few hints or tips how to do that. The first one is, you should first think and then develop. It happens often that you have decisions where you know, well, suddenly, yeah, I have to do the GDPR. Let's just do it quickly in some form or another, that it just works somehow. And there's no real user usage concept. The user is overwhelmed. The developers don't understand the API. And you should always keep the API small and the user interface small. And the complexity should be put into the code. The second one might be more for the security people, because privacy first, it also needs security first. So if I work on privacy, but just ignore the security, then at some point my data gets lost and then the privacy is gone as well. So the goal should be, first of all, not to save any data, because if there are no data, they can't get lost or can't get stolen. And data that are not there, so a user that can't access data, then the user can't leak data. So first of all, you have to take care of the security and then the privacy. Or in other words, if I take care of privacy, I at the same time take care of security as well. Next, third tip or hint is to have a standard API. For example, Moodle does it by giving out these badges on their website. If you write a plugin for Moodle, then for each plugin they have these badges that tell you if you publish your code regularly, if it's a plugin that's pretty well made, and as well, as you can see here, if it is privacy friendly. So everyone who does not have this badge does not, well, everyone who is not privacy friendly does not get the badge. So the idea would be to make it mandatory for people to use the privacy API. If that's not possible because the software is a bit older, then you should at least, if you can't punish wrongdoing, you should at least give them a treat for doing something right. So, to put it in a nutshell, there is three things we have to do as developers. First of all, we have the right for information. So, as a user, I have the right to at any time get my data that is saved about me. And I have a right to correct the data if there is a mistake in there, but also the right to have it deleted. And we'll get back to that because that's mostly the most difficult part. And there has to be the lawfulness of usage. So for everything that I am saving about the user, I have to also note why I am saving it, why I'm recording it. And I have to make sure that they agree to it, or I am required by law to record it. And of course, after the lawful usage ended, I have to delete it. So for some software, that also means that after a given time, you have to be able to delete this data. So for example, if I do have audit documentation, then after 1 or 2 years, when I have to delete it, then I also have to make sure that after 2 years, they are deleted. So then the lawful usage ends and they have to be deleted. So let's start with the first one. Data inquiry. How does it look like in Moodle? First, it looks quite simple. You can just put in input an inquiry. This is the most easy user interface you can have. Certainly no interfaces like this from WhatsApp or Facebook or maybe Google. All of those have a very similar interface. So here you can ask to get your information or delete it or download your data. So what happens in the background? In Moodle, a zip file is created with all the data that you can download. This data has to be machine readable, but also user readable and understandable for the user. So here we have a slight problem how to make it understandable for the user so he knows or they know what kind of data is saved, but also machine readable so they can import it into another system. In Moodle, I want to show one of these zip files now. Looks like this. So I have the zip file, including an HTML file. And for each part of this, I can have a look what's saved in there, what kind of data is in there. And let's look at the big blue button, for example. So the name test, intro is empty, completion, state 0, whatever that means. I have a few logs. And I would like to know what this log join means, for example. Then I can go back to the Moodle page and have this plugin, and it can tell me what kind of data is saved or recorded for me and what it means. That's how I personally imagine how a good implementation would look. The user has everything understandable, and I can have a look at any time what the system is saving of me, and everything where it notes zusätzlich, German for additional, that's just additional information. And at any time, I can have a look what kind of data is recorded, I can download everything, and it's just a zip file, so it's very easily handled. And it also includes the JSON files, that's technical information, and the user can just import that into the next system if they so wishes. So the question now is how to do it properly in a technical way. Moodle distinguishes two cases here. For each plugin you write, you have to start your API that either says I'm not saving any data or recording any data. Then of course there doesn't have to be an export, or I am recording data in a database. Then you can also have additional external data. For example, BlickBlueButton is an external application that's not part of Moodle. So it can happen that you are recording other information. So you can be required to say that you are recording data that's not part of Moodle. All of this looks very easy for people who don't record any data. They just say, I'm not recording any data, and they have to give a reason. You can see this in a language string here that's very easily adapted and translated as well during usage even. And yeah, you should encourage data, low data usage. So yeah, maybe it comes up that now I have to save data, but I'm encouraged to think about doing it maybe in a different way, in a way that does not require recorded data. Next point is a separation of systems. So each plugin writes their own information because I cannot know what the files, in this case, the question database, I cannot know what they are recording about me, and it might change even. And each part of the system has to know for themselves and declare for themselves what they are doing. And in 7, we made the documentation part of the software because right now we have properly defined what database field belongs to which point, which information. So with this declaration that I now made, I am actually helping myself with the development. Next hint or tip is that the most common or the default case has to be easily done. When I just think about recording some data, and that doesn't happen very often, then it has, or it does happen very often, then it must be easily done. Moodle does it by giving information. So give me information about this context. It's a bit of technical background. So each and every plugin has their own context. And the API has to receive certain data packets, and it then builds this zip file that we've seen earlier. The next thing is an exceptional case. For the exception, Moodle thought about something special. It just says, if you have additional data, then just give us the file for it, and we just provide that in addition. That has the bonus that it's a very simple API, and the user just knows what to do, and it's very easily expandable. So whenever I have additional files, then just adding a file and appending a file is very simple. So for the data export, I have a lot of work in preparation. The whole API that we've seen, that was a lot of work for the Moodle people. In development, it wasn't too much, because the data you get from the database in any case, you just have to hand that over. And it's a very clean way of doing things. The data model is clean, it's full transparency, and just makes sense. Then deleting data, that's actually the most complicated part of it all. Because deleting data is unfortunately quite complex. You can think about it this way. There is no way to just say what data can be deleted. With giving out information, it's relatively simple. I can say what kind of data is part of that user or belong to that user, and then you can decide I give it out or I don't. But when deleting, I have to sometimes look at, am I even allowed to delete the data? Because audit data, for example, must sometimes not be deleted. So if I sometimes delete information, for example, grading data, then also the handling plugin has to be able to work with missing information at times. So I have to check if I am allowed to delete information or data. And the real problem is connected data, because when I generated data out of basic data, then I technically would have to also delete those. So how do I implement that properly? There's no way around an automated testing, because there's so many things that could happen that ideally you have to test things automatically. But the bonus is, if you did that once, then you really have an automated test and you profit from it bigly or greatly. So how this is done is quite simple. So the idea is simple, but the plugins often need several hundred to thousand lines of code, and a lot of testing was necessary. So now let's see how we can delete data. For example, I have, because everyone can understand it, messages in a forum. So I have a forum, and messages should not be, could be deleted, or a user is deleted. So I have the first option, the messages stay, but the user is deleted and removed, then it's anonymous, an anonymous message. The second option is that the messages are deleted as well, but that could lead to some discussions being basically unreadable, because half of the users are missing and some of the information and from the discussion is missing. That could also be handled by just deleting the whole thread if the first message from the thread is missing, or everything quoting the original message is deleted. That could also lead to other problems. So anonymizing has the advantage of being relatively easily done, and the functionality mostly stays intact. But sometimes it's very difficult to automate that, because if some user is mentioned in a message, then I might have to delete that mentioning by hand. The normal deletion has the advantage of very little manual labor, but it could also lead to software that reacts quickly. Because when I think about deleting a lot of data, then at some point I have a very slow software, because I have an increasingly big database. And if I delete it, it's just not there anymore. But data integrity is a very big topic then. So we really have to do a lot of testing and adjust a lot of small steps in the software, so a lot of work. Then there's cascading deletion. It's pretty much the same as normal deletion, but we have even less manual labor. But users might complain, why is this thread missing now? I still want it to be there. So, in conclusion, if you really want, you can get it done with little work in advance. I usually have high development cost during usage, but if you do it properly, the software gets more stable. You have more automated tests, and you have faster software. That's something that we could measure in our project. So there are advantages to delete data. So especially with old software that's used for many years, it can really help. So now the last point, the lawful usage of data. So the easiest thing is not to save or record any data. That's the thing that developers prefer most, and maybe even the users like most. The next point would be that it should be a very central spot where you can agree to data recording. It should not be in 1,000 places for every plugin, their own agreement, because otherwise the user can really spend a lot of time looking for all the spots where they might have agreed to something. And another hint from my side, put a expiration date on all the data. In Moodle, you can do it. There is this interface. If you did it properly, then you have the option of saying, well, for each plugin, for each area, for each course or whatever, for each user, after a certain time, the data gets deleted automatically. That leads to a smaller database. It leads to less redundant data. And the user can find what they need faster, and they don't have to look through the data from 10 years ago. So these are a few ideas or theses of mine that I want to give, especially people in the management area. If you do it properly, data protection leads to better security because you have to save less or record less data. Secondly, it leads to more robust software because if I can work with missing data, then if something like that happens on accident, I'm still not crashing. Additionally, I have less data that I have to keep in my database, so the database is smaller. So maybe I have other advantages with my database. It loads faster, it has fewer downtimes, and the whole software is more easily maintained. Additionally, one thing that I've seen in many projects, that data protection also rewards properly maintained or developed software, because if the software is properly developed anyway, it can be more easily adjusted to data security. Because people who just quickly developed something without really planning it properly, they have bigger trouble with data security, because when data is missing, they might run into trouble. And often you have to think less complexly if you have less data to record. Data were called the oil from the 21st century, but my idea about this is, well, that also means collecting it without thinking too much can be a big problem when they go missing. That's it from me. I'm open for questions. Yeah, I really like your idea, your basic ideas. And I often see that companies have trouble. So yeah, they always think doing this, we are saving energy and time if we don't do it, but actually they are saving time in the back.
We do have a question, which is only half matching the topic. She's a user of Moodle. Maybe use that X course. If she wants to have her data deleted, that's usually a case of permissions. There's a regular interest for deleting data. She should be able to do that, and if not, please contact support. What I really liked in your talk is the badges to provide an incentive. And so data frugality is something that is fun and joyful. That process to get there to provide an incentive for data frugality to the developers. Is there a guideline to procedurally approach that? It's easy to get lost and implement this and implement that and implement that again. The most important thing is to start developing software in a very clean way, which makes implementing those things a lot easier. Well-structured software makes it a lot easier to extract that software instead of something that's been built by random acts. And gamification is very helpful with that. So, for example, who's able to implement a certain feature by collecting the least amount of data? It takes a lot of work and time in the beginning, but makes the software a lot easier to use and keeps you from blocking your own way. It has many benefits. In the long run, it's more performant, it's faster, it provides less problems. I also see that when consulting with companies, many applications are blown up and bloated. And many companies think GDPR is impossible to tackle. I've seen that many times at the university with other projects or institutions. We have so many things and we actually don't really know how to approach that and how to tackle that. If we return to the beginning of my talk, they ended up in that depression on how to make that all possible. So they've actually been collecting data and not thinking about this project for way too long. So they should probably think about replacing the whole process and re-implementing from scratch. Because they'll end up with a process that is impossible to grasp. With existing systems, how quickly is it possible to implement and switch to a GDPR compliant system? And what are the most problematic parts? Depends on the size of the software and the complexity and how complex it is. How long I've been running that software. And the most complex thing in general is deleting, because just removing data is not that hard. And Moodle does it with an automated process. But you don't have to do that with automation. if you rarely get any requests for information, then it's okay for that one request. We manually take a very close look. It's not worth investing a lot of time for the moment. But keep in mind that you only have 4 weeks to respond to such a request for information. And if suddenly hundreds of people come with an information request, you'll easily get overwhelmed with those. But there's no obligation that this has to be automated. That's also a lurking ghost in GDPR. What are the pain points and where it's easy to trip across over? What are the risks and risk assessments of GDPR and storing data? Well, if you don't store any data, there's no need to think about what happens if you don't store the data. Yeah, it's often missed. Does Moodle also consider deletion in terms of locks? Yes, I have an example for that. Lock data comes to the common data that you actually want to have to understand your own processes. If you take a look at what exactly happened when a user took a certain action, and Moodle automatically saves that logs into a database table. And as you can see, you also do get that data when a user requests their information. That data contains a timestamp, and it will automatically be removed from the database. So that works quite well. You also need to have a lock system, which user took an action. Otherwise, that will be very hard to do. So in most systems, this should actually be already implemented in that way, saving the data with a relation to the user and being able to extract it. I hope the question has been answered. I do hope as well I would consider that answered. Thank you very much. That was quite entertaining. We'll virtually move you over to our breakout room. So if you have a few minutes more left to maybe take a few questions from our audience. So I see. Thank you very much. See you in a minute. Few notes from the Privacy Week team. This year we're of course fully online only, and we also try to do an interactive experience for you. So we'll be providing lightning talks on Friday, and it goes like this. You send us a video about a topic that you want to convey with a maximum length of 5 minutes. And all the lightning talks will be played back to back in a separate time slot. And all the participants who send us a lightning talk will be available in a breakout room where you can actually talk to them and ask them questions about this topic. If you're interested in providing a lightning talk for that, please send us an email to office@privacyweek.at. And for entering this, we're following the common principle, first come, first served. So take a chance and send it today or maybe latest tomorrow, so we have time to prepare. So we'll continue with digital self-protection, interactive material for learning and teaching. But 1600 we have a talk about live TVs, like about talking to right-wing people, and that documentation is available. 1600, 5 p.m., we continue with a society contract, where to go, with Christian Swerz and Peter Purgetrover. You both know them. You know both of them. And at 1800, we have a talk about your body as a key, about biometric data for consumers. And in the evening from 1900, we get a visit by Natasha Wintorts. We do not need this part two. So despite GDPR, the board still turns. And our evening closes with a reading of Die Unvollkommenen by Theresa Honey. We'll see you in a minute.
Yeah, this was the translation of the talk, Successful Technical Implementation of the